Hello, everyone. What is up? Welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I have some amazing news. It's finally April. Can you believe this month? It blew my mind when I looked back at, you know, I don't know, I was filing some receipts or something. Like, that's how bored I am. I'm taking a lot of time filing receipts. That's exciting for me now. And I was looking back at the first day of our now postponed tour, which was on February 28th, this year, the second last day of February, realizing that was only a month ago. It feels like a year. Wow. I mean, hey, here's to a better April than March has been. I hope everyone is hanging in there okay. You know, staying safe, practicing your social distancing, doing all the things that, you know, they're telling us to do. I'm up here in Canada, Windsor, Ontario. Actually, that's where I call home these days. We went from like 9 cases to now 35 cases in just a few days. So people around here are starting to freak out a little bit. And I think that maybe is a good thing because, you know, I've been out and about a little bit, as little as possible, but I almost had a panic attack at Walmart the other day when I saw people just literally hanging out in the bread aisle like, hey, sure, let's just have a huge conversation amongst, like, I'm not even kidding, it was like 9 or 10 people just hanging out, kibitzing, not 6 feet away from each other in the bread aisle. I was like, this is pretty weird. I'm here to get my Miller High Life beer and get out of here. That's what I'm here to do. So anyway, that's just me. Otherwise, I'm hanging in there okay. A little bit of news for people tuning in. I'm going to be doing a live stream concert, I guess, from my living room. I'm going to be playing a bunch of Silverstein songs on Sunday. So I think it's, geez, April 5th. Oh, I don't know. I'm getting very, very bad with the days at this point. I mean, who isn't, right? Like, every day is pretty much exactly the same for me. But it will be on Sunday, which is the 5th. I was right. So tune in. It's going to be on Silverstein's Facebook page. So if you're still on Facebook, which you probably are, you probably could dig up that old, you know, password, reactivate that account, do what you got to do. Come hang out. It's going to be at 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific. If you're in Europe, that translates to like 10 p.m. Sunday. So yeah, tune in. I'm going to be playing a decent set on there. I've done a couple live streams actually for the All Access Club. I'll talk about that in just a second. But yes, Sunday, tune in. I'll be playing some tunes over on the Silverstein Facebook page. Yes, I have done some live streams for the All Access Club. If you're wondering what I'm talking about, this is kind of like the podcast fan club for people that love the show, that want to give back, that want to help me keep this thing going every single week for free, even amongst a global pandemic. That's right. I'm still doing it and it will always be free, not to worry. But if you're still working, if you've got a couple extra bucks kicking around, maybe because you're not going out to eat or spending any money, I'm out of work, but I do find myself pretty much sitting around the house, you know, not ever spending money. So I guess it kind of works out. Anyway, check it out, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access for as little as $6 a month. It gets you in, it gets you access to a whole bunch of bonus episodes. Maybe you've listened to all of them. I know my friend Billy from Silverstein's watched 7 Star Wars movies in the last few days. So, I mean, if you can watch 7 of those in a row, you probably listen to a lot of podcast episodes if you want to. So if you need more, I got more. It's all available there, not to mention access to a great community of other fans of the show, and you'll make some friends for sure. We do Sinner meetups all over the world. Sinner, that's what I call the members of the All Access Club. the meetups probably will be postponed for a little while, like everything else in the world. But don't worry, we will be back, of course, and it's awesome. So again, the link is leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. Check it out and welcome new members. So many new people have signed up, which is awesome. Love you all. And I'll see you over there on the Facebook group really, really soon. I think I'm bored because these intros seem to be getting longer and longer. But hey, this week, by the way, we've got a really, really great episode with Ronnie Winter Defoe of the Red Jumpsuit Apparatus, a guy that's been heavily requested. You've asked for him many, many times. And I actually don't know Ronnie that well. Well, I should say I didn't know him that well. And we did a couple emo night shows together and we just hit it off. Guys, awesome. Band's awesome. They got a new tune out, which is really, really sick too. We talk a lot about that. And I'll tell you what we don't talk about. We don't talk about the coronavirus because at this point, it wasn't a thing yet. So don't worry. If you want to tune out all the shit going on in the world right now, this is a great place to be. So put in your headphones, close your eyes, and listen to me and Ronnie on your stereo. Here it is, my conversation with Ronnie of the Red Jumpsuit Apparatus. Ronnie, dude, thank you for doing this, man.
You kidding me, man? It's my honor.
Oh, man, it's you've been requested for a long time by a lot of people, like for years. So I'm glad finally this worked out.
Wow, that's nice to hear.
So you told me before we started recording you're in a hotel. You guys are playing you played a show last night, right? Are you heading back
yeah.
a little bit of a break and then you're hitting the road pretty hard again, right?
Yeah. We're doing really good. This is our first little run of 2020. Wow, yeah. We had all of January and almost all of February off. And then we just started this new run. We did two nights in Denver, then Salt Lake, then Vegas. And last night was Reno.
Reno. I haven't been to Reno in a while. How's it doing up there?
Dude, it's awesome. Like everybody says that, you know, I got a lot of band friends just like you do.
Yeah.
And you know, bands talk about, you know, what town is hitting right now, what's not, but like, the last two times we've played Reno, it's banged hard. Like,
awesome.
There's a definite scene. You guys would crush here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know the Sacramento scene and the Reno scene are kind of, you know, they're not too far away. A lot of the same kind of people. And Sacramento is amazing. But the problem I always found with Reno was just, there just wasn't enough venues. You know, there was,
yeah.
that's, you know, that was the biggest problem.
I think that's always been the problem, that they open and they close and then they open and they close because they can't compete with the casinos.
Right. Know? Yeah.
But this this place we played specifically last night is not the same place we played before. Virginia Street Brew House was pretty sweet.
Cool.
You would like it.
Cool.
Six stage, good sound, good turnout.
Great. That's amazing, man. Well, you got a new song, single released, just came out about a month ago. A long time ago in a galaxy called LA. And you sent me this song and right away I like wanted to like start a circle pit in my living room. like your guys are going straight double time, like, you know, SoCal punk yeah. on this track, which I mean, I love it, but I was a little surprised.
Yeah, right on. Good. I like surprising people. That's what we're going for. You know how it goes, man. Been in the band so long, just like you guys. I still listen to all that music, and I used to say it in interviews all the time. And then it occurred to me, I was like, we haven't really put too many tracks out like that.
Right.
You know, in our discography, we got about three that have brushed on this type of production elements. But we tend to do a little bit more of like screamo than the old school straight
sure.
punk, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like, this time I just want to like, you know, tip the hat to the bands that like are still my favorite bands, like No Use for a Name. I mean, I'm still listen to that band almost every day, even though Tony passed away.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to do something that you know, tips the hat to a lot of the young kids that they missed that wave of that cool, you know, strung out, you know, no yeah. effects. Like they're a lot of those kids don't know about those bands yet, and they're still discovering them right now. So I'm literally just trying to help, like, shed some light on the elders by releasing this track.
Yeah, well, I'm wearing a Lagwagon hoodie right now. So,
oh my gosh!
You know I'm down. But dude, no, it's true, man.
I should have said Lagwagon. Dang it.
No, it's true though. You know that. You know, we just talk about that fast double time. You know, element. I mean, when I was, I guess, like maybe 14 or something, and I heard like NoFX being like the biggest one for me, and I heard that beat, you know, that skate punk fast punk beat, I was like, it changed everything for me. Like I only yep. wanted to hear music like that for a long time. Yep. You know, and obviously, you know, you start to, you know, go different ways and meander around, but it is true that you don't hear that too much in music anymore. Although, you know, you do hear like The Story So Far is a contemporary band that does it. Pierce the Veil does it sometimes. Neck Deep does it. So it still is out there, but I do wonder, like, your fans specifically, when they hear that, do they think, like, this is a fresh idea that you guys came up with? And they don't know there's an entire scene, you know, from, you know, call it 20 years ago, that already had perfected it?
That's a good question. Yeah, I mean, honestly, that is the case. I was asked that a couple times already this year when the single dropped, you know, how the first wave of press interests come in, and some of the first interviews, one was a younger guy, and he was asking me about, like, you know, the production elements, and he was like, oh, it's so new and fresh sounding. And I was like, well, really all we did was take elements from 18 to 20 years ago and then just put some new cool tones on.
Exactly. Yeah.
The method is not the same. It's just, I'm just copying the bands that I grew up listening to. We just did it in super cool, brand new, fresh tones.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, I love it, and I'm stoked for, you know, whatever you guys are going to do next. I assume, is this going to be a part of an album, or is that going to be a separate kind of thing you're going to work on? Because it's been a couple years now.
We do. Thank you for asking. You didn't make me awkwardly try to bring it up on my own. I appreciate that. You're definitely a pro. But we got an EP coming out called the Emergency EP. You know, like everybody, like, you know, we were going to drop the whole thing on the first day because that's what's really popular right now. But then we changed our mind last minute just because we were really happy. I don't know, like with this particular EP, I know everybody says that about their new music, but it's really special to us because it's the first time our guitar player and drummer really did a lot of the writing on the actual music, not the songs per se, but like right. the physical riffing and the drums and the way that the, you know, the progressions move in and out. And then I wrote the songs on top of it, which a lot of times it's the other way around. I just kind of do everything.
Yeah.
So it's really special to us. We're just kind of slow rolling it out, but it is called the Emergency EP. The first single's out now, and then we're going to do another one or two singles and drop the rest of the EP in June.
Okay.
Or maybe even July.
Okay, cool. Cool. So it's coming out. And I assume, are you guys putting this out independently again?
Yeah. It's weird. It's always been weird with me. We've been independent for a decade now.
Yeah.
I've liaisoned through different people, DSPs over the years. So right now we're still independent, but like I've been going through negotiations with a couple other distributors. So one of them might jump on board because the first single's doing so well. You know how it goes when you're unsigned. A lot of people all of a sudden care about you when you have a song that has traction.
Sure.
So like there's some offers on the table for distributors. I may sign a distribution deal, which if any fans are listening, this is all just boring stuff. All that means is there's a logo attached at the bottom of the screen. But what it does mean for the band, it's just a little more promotional dollars and a little more like visibility online.
Yeah.
It doesn't change much for a band other than the fact that it's supposedly the way it's supposed to work is more people get exposed to your music. But we haven't had one in 10 years, so I don't know if I'll sign it or not, but I wanted to answer your question like as accurately as possible.
It
may be on a distributor.
I do appreciate the in-depth answer, Ronnie. You know, I got to say though, you know, you guys started out, you know, you guys on a major label, you came out with a bang. You know, I remember Warped Tour, I guess 2006. You know, it was like, hey, they're here, this new band, and oh, what's their name? Okay, it's kind of long. And then like all of a sudden it's like everyone knows their fucking name. Like this band is, you know, and it blew up. And it was interesting because at the time, you know, a lot of the bands that were big, you know, doing this kind of music, you called it screamo earlier, you know, were like Taking Back Sunday and, you know, Thursday or, you know, bands that were on independent labels. So you guys had this kind of major label machine behind you, which was different. But it's funny now how you've, you know, been there, done that, and now you're still a very successful band, but on the other spectrum, you know, now being independent and doing it yourself for so long. It's kind of, you've seen it all.
Yeah, we have, man. And I appreciate you bringing all that up. And you know what? Like, it was really hard for us. A lot of people don't realize that. We were young. Mm-hmm. We were in our early 20s. And, you know, and I remember, like, you know, you mentioned 06, but I remember in 04, you know, when when Broken Is Easily Fixed came out, you know, so yeah. Like we were on, you know, 06, like we were just, we had signed to Virgin, but before that, we knew about all the bands you already mentioned. We knew about Silverstein. We knew about Thursday. We knew about everybody that was already doing it and really good at it. But, and we knew that you guys were on, I think it was Victory, right? At
yep.
the time.
Yep.
So we went, I went to all the cool labels first. Please know and believe that. There's an email chains to prove it. We went to Fueled by Ramen. Fueled by Ramen said we were too poppy. I'm like, what? We have screams and breakdowns. Like, they're like, no, you're too poppy for Fueled by Ramen. I was like, dang it. That was a huge letdown because I love Less Than Jake. And I knew they were involved in that. I was so bummed.
Yeah, I mean, they have Fall Out Boy and Paramore. How are you poppier than that? I don't know. Anyway.
Right? I know. I didn't get it at all. I couldn't even believe that response. But it's all good. You know, I'm not the boss. I was just really bummed. That's who we wanted. That was our number one choice. I think we tried three times to sign to them with the same music. They heard Face Down. They heard Guardian Angel. They passed on it. We're like, oh, that was the first big bummer. So then we tried for Victory. We never got it, you know, we just never got any response back, but Victory was just killing it then. Yeah. They had you guys, they had Hawthorne. I mean, they were just like, honestly, in my opinion, like the top dogs.
Yeah.
Were outpacing a lot of majors and they turned us down. So then we're like, okay, how about Fueled by Ramen? I mean, we tried them all. We went to them. They turned us down. We went to Equal Vision. They turned us down. We tried every label that had the bands that we thought we were cool first. Of course, naturally.
Yeah.
And, you know, they all didn't like the name. They all didn't like the name. They thought the songs were cool, but just not for them.
Yeah.
So we were in this weird limbo phase where it was like, my manager was like, dude, I did what you asked me to do. You know, we got all the no's. We got a bunch of no's. Can I try pitching you to the majors? I was like, why? How are they going to like us? You know,
sure.
I mean, you know what I mean? We just tour on the weekends. We also have jobs. Like, there's no, I mean, we did sell out shows in our hometown. And I try to tell kids, own your hometown.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these A&Rs would fly out. We had an A&R from the other label I really wanted to sign to was Epitaph. They sent a guy down. We did so many showcases in our hometown. Big rooms, sold out, no support, just us. So they knew there was an organic thing happening in Florida anyway, and kind of the Southeast Atlanta, Florida, Birmingham, Alabama type of region. That's when we were really crushing it.
Yeah.
But they just didn't commit. So finally it was Capitol, man, Capitol Records, not Virgin, who flew us to LA. We did a showcase. Andy Slater, who was the president, stood up at the end of the showcase and said, I want to sign the band. And everybody started clapping.
Wow.
It was the craziest moment where, like, whoa,
what a weird
we're gonna
feeling.
Sign the Capitol.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we were like freaked out because we're just so used to getting no. You know, the Capitol said yes. It was crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. There was a few of bands like that. You know, I remember when, you know, the majors started picking up like Thrice and then Thursday got picked up. Like, I think it was Island picked them up.
Yeah.
Yellow Card, I guess, was on Capitol too, I think.
Yep.
So, you know, they were kind of picking up these bands, and then that just kind of meant the other labels, the other majors were like, oh, there's a movement here. There's something going on. Let's get to the bottom of this. And, you know, and then Taking Back Sunday got signed to Warner Brothers, and, you know, and then it all started happening. I mean, you guys were a big part of that, you know, but it's just to have that kind of success out of the gate with that song that's still crushing it. I mean, I look at your Spotify streams. It's like insane. I mean, not even just that song. That whole album is still doing so well. You know, it's it's crazy, right? Because you're so young, you don't know how anything works yet, and you get this lightning in the bottle, and then you just like, you know, and it's like, I guess you don't know, like, we're either going to be, either this is it, or we're going to end up being the biggest band in the world, like, or somewhere in the middle. And, you know, it's really a hard thing to know what to do with.
Right.
I mean, how was that for you guys? Just all of a sudden you wake up and your song's number one, because that's pretty much what happened.
Well, definitely not in our perspective, but I could see how like it would appear that way to other people. So again, so like in 03, 04, we were playing shows already. So the album didn't come out till 06. So we were those kids who were in a band that was a local band who was playing shows for years, listening to bands like Silverstein, Thrice, The Used, Take It Back Sunday. We were just fans of that, of all of those bands, Silverstein, who made a band called Red Jumpsuit Apparatus. Essentially, it was just me, and it's always just been me hiring, firing my friends. Like, pretty much all of my friends from high school have been in my band for a couple of years. You know what I mean? So, like, I'm just a fan of all you guys. So, like, we did a lot of shows, man, for quite a few years before we got signed. So it definitely wasn't an overnight success as far as like the people who were in the band, but as far as a PR standpoint,
right?
Because we were so underground because we weren't worked by an indie first, and we didn't go through the indie label, which is the proper way to do it. The indie label kind of building system, you know, through a Victory or through Equal Vision. It appeared as though it was overnight because we had never had any press, you know. We had been literally selling out venues for over a year before we even signed a deal to Capitol. So, you know, the work was put in. But as far as like the PR angle, which I think is what you were referencing, yes, it was lightning in a bottle. It was like all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I mean, we weren't used to that. You know what I mean? You're like, holy crap, what's going on?
But it's, you know, it's like, but I mean, more what I'm talking about is just the major label ability to
push,
to break a song, whereas Victory... They had some big hits over the years, but it took everything they could muster to get, you know, to get some of those like records to sell gold or sell platinum, you know, and they never had songs on the radio, no matter how much hype their bands had, you know, and then, you know, you guys are on a major label and it's like, they're just going to do it because they already have those relationships and everything. So it's a huge advantage, but the record's gone platinum, like now too. Where do you keep your plaques?
I used to just keep them in the garage in a box, which I know is like a lot of people think is lame. And then my wife was like, "Hey, what's this?" And I was like, "Oh, it's my platinum record." She's like, "What is this doing in here?" So she dug up my gold and platinum records and put them all up nice. And now they're kind of displayed on each side of an entry tunnel after you walk in my front door. And it's really cool. You'll see the gold one on the right and the platinum one on the left. And then we have a bunch of, we've accumulated quite a bit of actual, what they call certified Billboard number ones too. So I got 10 of those. So I got plaques for each one of those number ones too. So, you know, there's some plaquage going on now that I'm almost 40, I've accepted that it's okay to put it on the wall and it doesn't look, I'm always so worried about looking like a tool bag, even though I'm not one, you know, I try hard not to, you know?
Right. No,
she was right. It's something to be proud of. So it's up now. It's up in display.
No, I always like to ask people that question. Cause I think it's funny how, you know, a lot of people end up having that kind of response, you know, like, oh, I have it in my basement, or I hang it like just where I do my with my guitars or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah,
you don't know where to put it. You know, it's like once you have it, like what do I do with this thing?
Well, the debut record's been out for almost 15 years, and we talked a little bit about the streaming numbers, but so I mean, clearly those songs still resonate with people. People are still finding out about your band. Why do you think that is? That you guys, for some reason, you know, you take all the other hit songs of that era. Why is it that your music still today seems to be so widely, you know, listened to?
Well, I like you a lot, Shane. And I like how you run your band and how your band runs its business. And I'm similar in a way to where I kind of know everything that there is to know, just like you guys. So with that being said, I think I have an answer to that. due to my own research from the intel that we've gathered that fans can't always get, you know, because we have access to numbers that they'll never see, just like you guys do. And we, you know, we've mulled over these type of questions, and here's what I can deduce only for my band. So this is just, I can only talk about my band and my music and how it's worked out. But when I look at other artists and then I look at ours and I compare and I see, okay, what did we do? The one thing that we have done well, we've made a lot of mistakes. We've had some press snafus. We've had some issues with, you know, partying too hard and getting in trouble. Lots of little dumb stuff that bands go through. And all that was a long time ago. With that being set aside, one thing that we've always done right is every single record that we've put out after we left Virgin, every one of them, we've had an actual number one radio song in a row. Every one of them. So when we put a new record out and we have another charting single, and sometimes there's been two or three charting singles, it brings a new crop in that didn't hear that first album that then it goes back.
Right.
So it's, you know, we just did it right. Like we tried so many times to try to like maybe reassimilate back into the system, but any of the label deals that were on the table were so disgustingly terrible compared to the first one that we already got away from. It was like, whoa, why were we like, this is worse. This is worse than the one that we got out of. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So like, that's scary. So we just stayed in the, we are a weird band, man. We have a weird band name and we're a weird band. We started on a major and then we went underground and we stayed underground for 10 years straight until last year. And that's when I started just using more kind of like, you know, widely known indie label tactics. So people think that we're like, quote, back per se. We never really went anywhere. We just went super deep in the underground. We literally just only talked to our fan base. We only communicated with our fan base. We made music for our fan base. We didn't do press releases for almost 8 years. And still we consistently had charting singles. So all these new fans that we cultivated, you'd be surprised. You would be surprised. I could introduce you to quite a few fans who like our last album and didn't know that we're the same band that put Don't You Fake It Out. They only know Red Jumpsuit Apparatus from The Awakening, which had one single that was number one on Billboard's Christian Rock Radio, which is a charted radio board for 3 months. We were number one for 3 months straight. That's hard to do, to stay on top that long. A lot of those kids didn't even know we were what they called the face down band. You know what I mean? So like, that's my theory. We just kept putting out, we just made sure that we at least had one or two singles that charted on a radio chart, not necessarily mainstream or top 40 or active or alternative. We just found one that was more comfortable for us and we started banging out singles and we cultivated this whole different new fan base, which then after they already loved us for the new music, dove back into this awesome classic music.
Yeah,
that's my theory.
It's really interesting, the whole Christian, you know, market and you guys, you know, being a part of that now in a big way. And that's, I mean, that's great, you know, for you guys. And I know you're a man of faith and all of that side of it too. But it's also really smart business, you know, to be able to, you know, get into that market, because so many of those people, they aren't really aware of a scene at all. You know, a lot of them are very sheltered, whether it's where they live, or whether it's like their parents not allowing them to listen to secular music, you know, which a lot of people have. So, you know, you being able to be, you know, a real band singing about real stuff, it's easy for people to really latch onto that. So it's I think it's really, really smart approach.
Well, and again, like everything you just said is very true, which is exactly why we wanted to be there. So like music is weird, man. You know that. So like we already came out mainstream. We were not considered a Christian band.
Yeah.
But we had like spiritual lyrics, but like we weren't like doing what Under Oath was doing, which was like huge, you know, Christian festivals and, you know, preaching from the stage. We never did any of that. Like we were not identified in that scene whatsoever for like a solid 10 years. We had nothing to do with any of that, but we had spiritual lyrics. So the only thing that we started doing is we still never really bought into that system. We never participated the way that the Anne Berlins and the Under Oaths and the other, by the way, I love all those bands. This is not a diss, but they were just doing things that we weren't doing. They were full blown in the Christian scene. Devil Wears Prada, you know, like it's Jesus or death. You know what I mean? But I thought like, I love all those bands and I dig the lyrics. I'm just a lyrics guy. So I'm sitting there reading our lyrics and I'm like, you know what? I don't see why Christian Radio wouldn't play some jumpsuit stuff. I mean, I'm not necessarily as over the top as some of these guys are about it, but I'm, you know, I'm putting some like some spiritual elements in here. So we just tried it. We didn't have a Christian label. We didn't have a Christian PR company. We were not connected in this huge, you know, million-dollar Christian music industry. None of them like us, by the way. We're not really attached. We just went straight to radio. I found a way to do it. I found a way to submit to just, you know, just to see if it would get played by some program directors. And they love the song. The first try we did was Am I the Enemy back in 2000 and I want to say 14.
Yeah.
And it was a risk, man, because, you know, we're not known. It was actually scarier trying to do that than it is to say like, oh, we've aligned ourselves with these people. We didn't do it that way. We're Red Jumpsuit. We've always done everything. Oh, 2011. And what do you know? They played the song. So we couldn't even play. They played the song because it was heavy. It's called Am I the Enemy? It's got screams. It was produced by John Feldman. And it's very just like super punk. Not as punk as the new single, but like just dialed back a little bit. Still super punk. Breakdowns, 808, heavy screams. They played it and then it went number one. So that was our first charting Christian rock Billboard number one song. So from that point forward, I just knew at least we had a place that we could submit singles that would get a chance.
Yeah.
That's it. That would get a chance just to get heard. And those kids who did hear our band, some of them who were kind of in the sheltered, because unfortunately it's the truth, man. You said it. I am a spiritual man, but that does not mean that I'm a religious man. I am not a religious man. I do not adapt to a religion. I don't claim one. I don't push one. I just think spirituality is cool and that God works for me. So if it works for you, right on, you know? So like, that's how it works for us. We just found an outlet that actually would play our music, and the fans that found our band, we led them to you, man. People who found us found Silverstein. People who found My Chemical Romance. We were the ones helping crack that door open, saying, hey, you don't have to be a full-blown Christian band to make good music and be good people. Right. We've helped do that since 2011. And I can't tell you how many fans have come up to me and been like, dude, until your band, I only listened to hardcore Christian music. And then I listened to your band and it's opened me up into a whole new genre. And I'm so grateful. And I'm like, dude, thanks for listening. What else do you say? You know, because there's so many awesome bands out there that aren't forced to pick a side, you know?
Yeah.
So like, I don't know. That's the way we did it.
Cool. Another kind of interesting thing about your band too is, you know, your second album, I don't want to call it a flop because that's not accurate. But what was really interesting, I thought, was that when your second album came out, your first album was still charting in the top 25. In fact,
I know.
The first album only sold 1,000 copies less the first week that your second album came out. And that's nearly 3 years after it came out. Do you think it's such a hard thing to navigate, right? Because it's been 3 years. You're like, we got to put a new album out, but the first album is still doing so well. People are still finding out about it. I feel like that must have been a really hard decision between you and Virgin to figure out how to do that and how to put out your second album.
Yeah. Well, let's start from the beginning. as far as being considered a flop or not, always that's an objective question.
So sure, of course.
It debuted 16 on Billboard. So I just don't think that coincides with the word flop.
No.
So it had a great debut. The first single charted, you know, I think it was number one in like 16 different territories and then top 10 in another like 50 territories on rock radio. But it was a different format, right?
Yes.
So Face Down was punk and Guardian Angel was emo. That's from Don't You Fake It. Then when Lonely Road came out, You Better Pray was very Southern rock, which we are from Florida, which is where Southern rock is happy. So what we did is we made a song because we grew up listening to like Lynyrd Skynyrd, because all those guys live literally in the same town that we live in.
Of course, yeah.
So when you're like 16 years old and the drummer from Lynyrd Skynyrd's driving in the big Bubba truck next to you, you think that that's cool. You know what I mean? Because they're from your towns. It's not just them. Molly Hatchet, Lynyrd Skynyrd, all of those like dirt rock, Southern rock bands are from right where I grew up. So we just literally wrote a song that was like a tip of the hat, because we're in this punk post-rock, you know, post-hardcore screamo band, but we still all listen to Southern rock.
Yeah.
And I was like, guys, we got to have at least one Southern rock for our roots. So it's funny. So everybody says, remember your roots. And then when you put a song out to try to acknowledge your roots, they hate on it.
Well,
they hate it.
Yeah. I mean, do you regret going that direction though? Because it really was confusing, I guess, for people that, you know, so many eyes were on you at that moment. It was like, you know, you've got this huge song and this album that's still charting. And then it's like, okay, what's next? And people were like, what? You know what I mean? It was like, if you could go back and do it again, would you have picked a different song?
No. like I said, if you really know the story, we wrote that song because we thought it was, you know, some ideas just don't pan out, bro.
Right.
You know, we thought people were going to think it was cool that we were trying to give credit to some of these old 70s rock bands that taught all of us young kids how to play music, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so like, and it didn't go over. Fans didn't get it. They're like, yeah, cool, whatever. We don't care. We don't like it. And we're like, oh, okay, fine. Check out the rest of the record. And they just didn't. You know what I mean? Like that one single really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Yep. So that's fine. That's fine, man. You know what I mean? Like we actually didn't pick the single. The head of the A&R at the time listened to the record and he's like, I don't know, man. I just really like this. This one is different. It's like a modern Guns N' Roses, I think is what he said. And we all got a laugh. We all got a laugh out of that. We're like, I don't know about that, dude. But you know how label guys are.
I really do. Yeah.
So I'm not going to lie. We did trust them as far as them picking the singles, but that's how it goes when you're on a major. You don't have a lot of say, you know what I mean? They kind of tell you. I've never been on a really great indie, so I don't know how those relationships go, but you know, when you're signed to a major, and you already have a gold record, there's money that's already been spent that you don't even know about. Yeah. So like they have, you know, they have some things that they make you comply to. So I don't regret it because I know that we were kids just doing what we were told. They told us that was going to be the single. They told us that we were going to film a video for that. We were like 25, 26. We were still just pumped that people liked our first album. We were just grateful. We were just happy to be a band that got to play with people like Silverstein and Taking Back Sunday. We were just so grateful. We didn't care. We're like, all right, yeah, do whatever you want. You did good with the last record. And you know what? It didn't work out in our favor, and that's okay.
Right.
You can't have a hit every single time, you know?
Right. No, you're right. I love that. I love that answer. One thing, you know, you talked about where you're from, you know, in Florida and Leonard Skinner and Jacksonville. One thing that was pretty cool that you got to do was sing the national anthem at a Jaguars game.
Yeah.
That must have been a very, very cool experience. I mean, that's a lot of people listening to you, to your voice and only your voice. I always wonder, you know, what it feels like to sing a national anthem. I've never sang one.
It was scary, man. Like, you know how it is. I've been a fan of you guys for a long time, man. And, I've seen you play many times in the back. I was one of those guys with a beer up, just rocking out. Loving it. So like, you know how it is, like in a band, you can play in front of 20,000 people and not be nervous because you got your bros with you, you know, like your best friends and friends in the band and best friends in life are with you. So like you can face anything and it's different when you're standing there by yourself. I was super nervous, but it was an honor, you know, hometown team. All my family got to watch it on TV. So it was kind of a big deal for the family. And
sure.
I hope I didn't, you know, I don't think I did too terrible of a job. I'm not a voice singer. You know what I mean? I'm just a punk singer.
Of course.
We sound different. People don't get that.
Exactly. And were you, you know, people are used to hearing our voices with like loud ass guitars and drums and stuff behind. Like that's what we do. You know, we're over top of that. So to put our voices, you know, the style of singing we do a cappella, for people that are there to watch a football game, not necessarily there to see a band or music. It's definitely, super different. But my question, I, how does it work exactly? Like, obviously you get booked or whatever, but you show up, like, obviously there's no sound check. Like, how do you hear yourself? How does it work? Like logistically on the day?
It was a nightmare, man. Like it was way different than I thought it was going to be.
Right.
Like, so I thought there was going to be like an in-ear pack, you know, a pack with some buds first of all, there was no booking either. They just reached out through, I think, Facebook to my brother And that's how it is in Jacksonville, dude. Things are still a lot really low key and old school. Mm-hmm. So somebody from the team probably was just hanging out at a bar and ran into my brother, because we still hang out with all of our friends in our hometown. Like, we never, you know, tried to be like, later guys, we're famous now. You know, like, we still hung out all the same places we did before we got signed. So sometimes people would like run into us that actually were affiliated with, like, you know, cool other people, you know, networking by accident, essentially accidental networking. And then, you know, one of the Jaguars reps asked my brother, he asked me if I would do it. And I think I said no first, just cause it freaked me out just to think about it. But then I wound up saying yes. So I didn't really have any information. We got there. They brought us back into this back room, which was cool. They had a jersey for me that they gave me, which I thought was really cool. And I still have, with my name on the back. That was really cool. And then they had some catering, and they're like, okay, well, we're going to go out there. And, I mean, they were like ready to do it, man. They're like, you got it. You good to go. And I was like, is there a room I can practice in real quick? Cause I was so nervous. They're like, yeah, here's this empty room. So I go in there and I do a couple acapella runs. And then they just explain the timing. The only thing they cared about was the timing. They're like, okay, here's the most important thing. Everything's going to sound weird. You're not really going to hear anything at all. And you're also going to hear an echo that's really strong. That's going to come back about 6 seconds after your first note.
Oh,
so it's
no.
really important that you ignore that. And at first I was like, okay, that won't be that big of a deal. And then I think I'm trying to remember. I can't remember if we did a dry run or not. I don't think we did. I don't remember doing that, but it was a long time ago. So I'm trying to be accurate, but either way, I'm on the field. And, you know, they just basically, they just look at you and point at you and say, go. There's no cue. There's no click. There's no anything. And then you're supposed to count in your head. And at a certain amount of seconds, jets were supposed to fly by. And that was the one thing they cared about the most. Like, okay, everybody gets this wrong. So when you get to like 39 seconds in your head, while you're trying to, you know, remember all the lyrics and not look like a total dork and sing on key without anything holding you in pitch, you got to hold the note while the jets fly, and then you can finish. Do you think you can do that? I was like, I had no idea what they were talking about. I was like, sure, sure. Why not? So I didn't count. I didn't do anything, man. I just did my best. And then afterwards, like, you're the only one who did it right. You did great. You did great. I'm like, I had no idea what you guys were talking about. I just literally held the note until I saw the jets fly.
I love that. That's amazing. Oh my God. Wow. That's way nerve wracking. I, if anyone ever asks me, I think I'm just going to say no. I don't want to go through that kind of stress.
It was tough, man. I'm not going to lie.
Another thing, you know, you've been pretty vocal about too is, you know, you talked about drinking a beer a little bit here. You talked about, you know, some other, you know, partying too much when you guys were younger, but you're sober now, you know, and I know you've had some issues with it and you've been pretty vocal about it. So tell me about that process and just, you know, how it is now. You know, you say you're almost 40. I know you have a kid. You got another one on the way. How's that process kind of been, you know?
Yeah, my brother, actually, he's going to have a baby in July. So some people thought it was me because they said winter baby coming. But my brother's last name is Winter.
Okay, got it. So, okay, well, you're going to have a niece or nephew, so...
Which is just as important. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a short, quick, easy story on that one. Like, you know, when we got signed, we were 22, and then right away we got endorsed by Jägermeister. And you know how it goes. Like, every venue is always good. When you're a band and you pull up and you've sold out a show, there's like three or four 12 packs. Like, you know, there's a bunch of bottles and stuff, and it's just always booze. And it's something that you get used to, and you have a couple of drinks here and there. And for the first couple of years, I just had like every other regular band guy, a couple drinks before the set, a couple drinks after the set. And then just somewhere along the line, somewhere who knows when, I don't think I can really put my foot on it. I just started caring more about drinking than the show. And that's not good.
No.
And then, you know, there was a couple of really bad performances where I'm just like tanked on stage. You know, YouTube kind of really helped me. And then I would see like, you know, some people saying like, oh man, he really sucked last night. And then a lot of times when people write that, you'll go look yourself. I don't know if you do that, but I do that. And I sounded just fine. So I'm like, okay, whatever. He's a hater. That show was awesome. Everybody had a good time. Who cares about that guy? But it started becoming more common to where like I would see somebody make a comment and I would click on the link and I would sound really bad. And I'd be like, oh man, I didn't know I was that off. And it's because I drank a little more that night than usual.
Right.
Or, you know, I thought I had six beers, but really I was on like beer 12. And that sounds crazy to some people, but when you're at a venue from noon all the way until 11 o'clock at night, it's not actually that hard to drink that much because you're completely bored all day long.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a gradual slope. That's the short story. But I eventually just got to the point to where, you know, my wife, I'll just tell you the truth. She was like, hey, look, you're just kind of like getting too crazy with it. Like when I, you know, when we first got together, it was fine. I knew you were in a band and the band guys drink a lot, but that's just part of the business. But now you're drinking like all the time. And that's what happened to me. That doesn't happen to everybody. I'm not trying to scare the planet and say, oh, you can't listen to my band unless you're sober. But I'm coming up on 5 years now of not drinking at all. And it's been the best decision I ever made, mainly, honestly, just for being a better performer. It's made me a way, way better singer. And I just didn't realize personally how much it was affecting my live show. And when she helped me realize that, I nipped it in the bud. I mean, other than that, I still live life, man. I do everything normal people do who drink. I just don't do it drunk.
Good for you, man. No. The thing you say about not knowing whether you had six beers or 12 beers, like, and how you say that, people will be like, what is he talking about? But I completely agree. And I always think about Warped Tour and like those days, man, like especially let's say you play early, like you get the 11:30 or the noon slot and then you're done and you feel good for the rest of the day and you're sitting out in the sun with your friends. With just unlimited Bud Lights
everywhere.
And I honestly, like, I went to the doctor, after, you know, a tour or whatever. I got a new doctor. So it was just one of those, like, you know, those things that you just like a checkup, like a introduction. So he's like, oh, hey, so, you know, would you say you're pretty healthy? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess so. He's like, okay, well, do you smoke? And I said, no. He goes, oh, that's good. He goes, what about your eating habits? You know, do you eat pretty well? I'm like, oh, well, I'm a vegetarian. He goes, oh, that's great. What about drinking? Do you drink? I'm like, yep. he's like, so how many drinks would you say you have in a week? And I'm like, oh, geez.
That's hard to answer.
I don't know, 50? and he like fell off his chair, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it wasn't 50. I don't know. Maybe I said 40, but I thought about it and I was like, well, something like Warped Tour, you're sitting in the sun all day drinking beers. Like, it's really easy to put back 10 or 12 without even thinking about it. You know,
and we don't have to clock in. You don't have to wear a name tag. You're not ruining anybody else's day. You just have another show tomorrow. You know, so it becomes easy to drink those 50 beers in a week. I know what you're saying.
Yep. Yep. No, exactly. But that is crazy. Well, congratulations, man, on the sobriety. Congratulations on the new single, Punkin' It Out. I love it. And all the other stuff you got going on, the tour. What else to tell the people before I let you go?
Just I hope one day Silverstein will let Red Jumpsuit open up for him. Just
well,
throwing
yeah.
it out there, dude. I'm just being super bold with it right now.
I love it. I love your boldness. No, I mean, we hung out, kind of how this all happened is we did a couple of those emo night shows together down in Texas.
Yeah.
And yeah, we hit it off. And we were talking about how, I mean, it would make a hell of a lot of sense. So
yeah, man, it would.
And I'll see you in Anaheim too, because you guys are playing. We're playing the same venue, separate shows, but the same venue.
I know. It's awesome. It's so crazy. We're actually like, we're going to be in the same town. Like, you know, like I said, man, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. You got to look, some things are just not coincidence. We're in the same town 3 nights in a row.
That's crazy.
That's wild. So I'll be seeing you soon. Sure. One way or the other.
All right, man. Well, I'll play the people the new track, A Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Called LA. Here it is on Lead Singer Syndrome. Thank you, Ronnie.
Thank you, buddy.
I remember when we met you, you taught me and I went numb. And I had to push recyclers, my brain switch was stuck on time. Lucky for me you did not run. I look away and peek again, don't have a clue. See a smile, it's for me. No one is standing in the city. I swear.
So there is new music from the Red Jumpsuit Apparatus, and yes, a fast one. I really, really like that song. And those shows that Ronnie was talking about, how we were going to hang out and be in the same city 3 days in a row, well, that didn't happen. So I didn't see Ronnie, and I hope Ronnie did okay getting home and all that stuff. Man, what a nightmare it's been out there for touring bands, and man, I hope this stuff blows over soon. So hey, you know, let's do our part, each one of us. Be good, practice our social distancing. Don't hang out in the Walmart bread aisle, 9 or 10 of you together. That's bad. Don't do that, because all I want to do is play music with my friends. And I hope I can do that soon. In the meantime, it'll be playing music on my own on the Silverstein Facebook. That, again, is on this Sunday, April 5th, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check it out. I will leave you with a tune. I'm going to break from tradition a little bit here. We heard the new Red Jumpsuit Apparatus. Of course, you all know their hit Face Down. It was in the intro. I'm going to play one of Ronnie's favorite bands. He talked about them here on the podcast. No Use for a Name. Rest in peace, Tony Sly. Here is International U-Day on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next week.
See, 1 million words can't describe how it feels to know your love. Where did I go wrong? I should have told you from the start that I'm closer than you think when we're apart. Nothing that I've tried is that simple as this time. I adore.